Today, we get the vantage point of watching the Lady Vols finish their practice in the court that's behind us here at Pratt Pavilion, and the Volunteers are about to hit the court. As Jimmy Hyams, today was media day for Coach Barnes and his club.
Yes, it was, and we had an opportunity to visit with a lot of the players. My goodness, I think we had about a dozen interviews that we've been able to get. We'll roll out some of those later today, but really enjoyed visiting with many of them, and I started out with Zakai Ziegler. What a great interview. Mm-hmm. He's looking forward to a return trip to the Barclay Center where Tennessee is going to be playing in November.
Yes.
So, yeah, he's looking forward to going back there, but he said he loves Knoxville, loves what Knoxville and the folks around here did for his family to relocate. But he also said he misses certain things about New York City. He would go to the Barclays and watch and sit outside the arena, couldn't get a ticket, sit outside the arena and watch the game on the big screens.
Would he?
So that's what he would do for the Nets games. But anyway, he was a great interview, had a chance to catch up with a lot of other players. And by the way, Euros Plavsic convincing me that Novak Djokovic is the greatest tennis player ever. Where's Djokovic from? Serbia. Where's Plavsic from? Serbia. But he may be right anyway.
I just think it was a non-biased approach. It was just breaking it down in terms of projecting that Novak can continue and pass Rafael Nadal when it comes to majors and titles and things like that.
He said, I said, have you ever met Djokovic? He said, no, I hadn't met him yet. And I said, well, when you go home, are you kind of like looked at as a hero? He said, well, yeah, but we only got 11,000 people in my hometown. So. but anyway, we had a chance to visit with him. PJ Edwards had talked to him as well. Jonas Sadu, a lot of the players. So, really enjoyed visiting with him, a lot of first-class guys, and they certainly sound like the chemistry is good among these players. They like each other. They get after each other in practice. They do a lot of stuff. Zakai Ziegler's roommate is B.J. Edwards, and so Edwards says that he continues to pick Ziegler's brain. But it's really had a fun time talking to the players. I know you had a chance to catch up with Josiah Jordan James and Olivia Kumwa.
That's right. Enjoyed, hung out with them because just enjoyed the conversation they were having with a couple of other folks that were talking to them, and then had the chance to just sit and listen to what they had to say. And it's amazing. One of the things that I asked Josiah is I said, so you're sitting here as a senior to be. I said, what do you think freshman Josiah Jordan James, how different would he see you from himself if he were walking right now? And he said, boy, he said, it's night and day. Because he said he thought that he had all the answers. He said, first of all, he wouldn't believe that I'm here for a senior year, but I couldn't be happier to be here for my senior year.
Well, you ask those deep questions. I ask him, who's the best tennis player from your country? it is an interesting answer because a lot of folks thought Josiah Jordan James could be a one-and-done player. Mm-hmm. And he still may have an opportunity to play in the NBA or somewhere professionally, but you got to like what he's done during his career at Tennessee, and he's become a great leader for this team.
Yeah, I mean, he is such a focal point for this program, and then you saw it last year where he simply just took over some games. And so to say going into last year that he really felt it necessary for him to be much more vocal and develop as a leader, and then to see him on the floor just become much more aggressive in what he was contributing. He was always a sound and solid plus defender, but now you look at what he was able to do and have some of the best offensive games in the orange and white for him, and I think that really the sky's the limit for him in what he can do coming into this season, especially when you look at how much help. It's one of the things he said that he really likes most about this team is just the talent that's at their disposal.
Yeah, and talking to some of the other players, they mentioned the talent, and Ziegler said, look, I said, you know, this is a program that's never made the Final Four. He said, well, that's not the ultimate goal. Our goal is to win the national championship. And there was another player that mentioned the same thing. He said, yeah, getting to the Elite Eight, that's great and all that, but we want to win a national championship. So they've got a lot of the right pieces. I've been on record as saying I think they're a big man away from being able to reach the top. They could end up proving me wrong. I thought it was interesting with Rick Barnes' press conference. He said that yesterday, for the first time, they went with an all-guard lineup, all five guards. So I asked B.J. Edwards what he thought about that, and he says, well, I was defending them. And he said it was hard. He said that they were spaced out and stuff. He said it was hard to do that. But he said that He sees a lot of potential for that five-guard lineup, as did Rick Barnes.
Yeah, and Kamwa. We saw what an impact it had on Santiago Vescovi, that when he got to go home and play for his national team, that he was teammates with pros. And he said just to see how they prepared one day to the next, how they worked, how they got themselves ready, how they were able to recover as quickly as they did. He learned so much, and you saw what it meant to him in his game. I think you could see something similar for Olivier, since he had a similar experience. He went to Finland. He said it was a pleasure to represent the country where he was born and raised, but he said got to work with a lot of pros, especially some that it was their last year of basketball. They'd already announced that they were retiring, so he really got some fantastic insights. And I did ask him, I said, so for the first time since you've been a Vol, what's it like being here and there's no John Fulkerson? And he goes, is it Tennessee basketball with no John Fulkerson?
I like that answer.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's a good group, and I think Rick Barnes is going to enjoy coaching this group. And already we've heard from players talking about how good the chemistry is about this team. So I think they'll be a lot of fun to watch, John.
I think they will. But obviously there's so much to talk about. We look forward to being joined a little bit later this hour by Rick Clawson. Great stories to share when it comes to Tennessee and LSU, but that'll be at 3:35. Hour number two, of course, is Vince's Views on Tuesday, so Vince Ferraro will be right here with us. And then we get to hour number three, we'll get the lowdown on the Tigers from our friend Brian Lazar of TigerBait.com. We turn our attention to the NFL at 5:30 with our good friend John McClain as he joins us from Houston. Practice report with Eric Kane in hour number four. We look forward to hopefully being joined by Tennessee coach Rick Barnes in hour number four of the program. Your chance to win with a Sports Fix at 6. And I guess, Jimmy, we should say, no surprise, but Tennessee, for the third straight game, will be playing in front of a sellout crowd. It's just that this one will be in Baton Rouge.
Yes, it will be. And we just checked, and it is a sellout. And the Tennessee fans got their allotment of 5,000. So Tennessee fans bought all 5,000. We had reported earlier about it. Pittsburgh, they didn't buy any from Pitt because Pitt put them up in the 500 level. But with the SEC, there's a more favorable reciprocating agreement, and so the Tennessee fans have bought 5,000 tickets for LSU. We get to our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters Technology. You need people that you can trust. So we mentioned the sellout. So I've been beating the drums that LSU is just not the same at home when they play before noon. Okay, so to further my rant, LSU's 8-0 at home when they kick off before noon. How about that? So, that doesn't look good. I will tell you that all eight of those wins have come against five different opponents. None were ranked. So, Florida, last year when they played them was unranked. It was Utah State before that, then Arkansas, then Kentucky, then Appy State, and Mississippi State three times. The three times they played Mississippi State was 3-9, 3-8, and 3-9. So, they really have not beaten good teams when they have played before noon. The last time LSU lost a home game when it was a morning kickoff, the last time they lost one was to Florida in 1995. That's the last time they lost one. Now, again, they haven't played that many, and they had not played ranked opponents. That Florida team in 95 went on to play Nebraska for the national championship. That was a really good team. So, anyway, I still don't think it's the same at LSU when they kick off in the morning. But it may not be the as impactful as I have suggested it would be. You know, we'll see.
Yeah, it still boggles the mind that this is a noon kickoff. I mean, you have one loss between the two teams. They're 8-1 combined.
Yep.
So why is this a noon game?
Yeah, I agree. Somebody told me, and I meant to check on this, that ESPN's carrying baseball playoffs, and that's interfering with it, and that impacts when they could play. And they said if you looked at the rest of the schedules, that's the only ESPN game from involving an FCC team.
Okay, so that would make sense.
I haven't double-checked it, but that's what somebody told me. Okay, a few other notes out there. Joe Lenardi's come out with another bracketology deal, and he's got Tennessee in men's basketball as a number three seed. They had been a number two. His one seeds are Gonzaga, Kentucky, North Carolina, and Houston. His two seeds are UCLA, Kansas, Baylor, and Texas. Tennessee a three seed, Arkansas a three seed. Auburn, a 5 seed. Alabama, a 6 seed. Florida, an 8 seed. Texas A&M, a 9 seed. The SEC with 7 teams in it. On the women's side, the number one seeds are South Carolina, Texas, Stanford, and Tennessee. It's got the Lady Vols, and Greenville is a number one seed. The other SEC teams in the women's side, 12 seeds are Missouri and Florida. LSU's a 4 seed, Arkansas a 7, Ole Miss a 10, Georgia an 8. 9 teams from the SEC are seeded. Dick Vitale came out with his All-American team. His first team includes Oscar Tshiebwe from Kentucky. He is the only player from the SEC on the first team. Tennessee will scrimmage against another one, Drew Timmy, the post player for Gonzaga. Tennessee's going to play that exhibition game in which a lot of that money is going to go to help with the foundation there to help some underprivileged. Dick Vitale doesn't have another SEC player until you get to the fourth team, Florida's Colin Castleton. And then on the fifth team, All-America team from Vitale, Shavar Wheeler. NFL last night, you got San Francisco winning against the Rams. It's a seventh consecutive win for the 49ers against the Rams in the regular season. Now, the Rams got them in the NFC championship game last
Correct.
Year, but San Francisco's won seven in a row against the Rams. Jimmy Garoppolo performed well, 16 to 27, 239 yards. I saw a graphic. I meant to write it down, but it showed San Francisco's record with Garoppolo and the record without him. It's incredible, the difference. And I don't think people look at him as a great quarterback, and I'm not saying that he is, but San Francisco's record with him versus without him, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, they were in the NFC title game last year. They were 10 points on top of Kansas City in the Super Bowl in the fourth quarter and just couldn't finish. And then, I mean, it's not as though he's had to apologize for what he's done for the 49ers, because there aren't many in this age that have done anything more than he has.
So what if they go 12-5 this year and get to the championship game again with Garoppolo? What do you do with Trey Lance?
Yeah, that's a good question. I believe you start calling up other teams and say, hey, we got a guy who's got a lot of potential.
Yeah. I tell you, it'll be interesting to see how that one plays out. Debo Samuel, another great game. 6 catches, 115 yards, had a wonderful touchdown pass and catch. The pass went about 5 or 7 yards down the line of scrimmage, and he turned it into a touchdown. Terrific play.
Rams did a great job against him when he ran it, but couldn't stop him as a receiver.
Yeah.
And I'll say this, you know, they talked a lot about it on the broadcast last night, but that pass where the defensive back jumps the route, he's going for the interception. If he is 2 inches taller or has 2 inches more on his reach, it could be a pick six.
Yeah.
But Samuel was able to go higher, make the catch, and it was amazing how many opportunities the Rams had to tackle him and just couldn't.
Yeah.
That was an incredible 57-yard catch and run.
It sure was. Matthew Stafford was sacked 7 times. He also threw a pick six. He's now thrown 28 pick sixes in his career, 5 with the Rams. All right, Cordell Patterson, the VFL, he's on the injured reserve list for Atlanta. You got Javonte Williams running back at Denver. He's out for the year with an injury. Kenny Pickett is now the starting quarterback for the Steelers. Major League Baseball, Philadelphia makes the playoffs for the first time in 10 years.
Sam Foreman celebrating.
Hey, they beat the Astros 3-0. Aaron Nola with the win. It was the longest drought of making the playoffs of any team in the National League. They are the 7th team to make the playoffs when changing a manager during the season since the wild card era, which started in 1994. Toronto also doing it. So you had it twice this year with a manager change, and they made the playoffs. Tony La Russa turned 78 today, stepped down as a White Sox manager, citing health issues. Let's see, Albert Pujols hits another home run. He's got 703. My goodness, is he going to rethink retiring? He might come back like Tom Brady.
Trying to take a run at Babe Ruth here in the last couple of days of the season.
Right.
Give me 714.
Oh. Then the Yankees, they pulled, is it Luis Severino?
Mm-hmm.
I had a no-hitter through 7. He had thrown 94 pitches, but he's not that far removed from rehab, and so they decided not to allow him to finish that. The Yankees don't complete the no-hitter. They beat Texas 3-1. Aaron Judge, in his last 12 games, has 1 home run. He's hitting 235, 18 walks, 15 strikeouts. Boy, I thought for sure he would break that record. But, you know, when you're in that situation, you don't get a whole lot of great pitches to hit, and then he's probably got a lot of eyeballs on him, which is bringing a lot of pressure to him.
You start applying more pressure, maybe get out of what is your natural approach, and there are just so many things can go haywire. And that was the first thing he said after he hit 61. It was just like, man, I thought I'd be here a lot sooner. But that is just kind of what it is.
Yep. So, all right. And those are our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters.
Today, fortunate to be here at Pratt Pavilion as, Jimmy, it looks like the Vols lining up for the start of practice.
Yes, they are. And so they've got a couple of drills that are going on right now, and we'll continue to observe that. We did have a chance to hear from a number of Tennessee coaches and players today. Joey Halsey, quarterback's coach, was bragging about Hendon Hooker, talking about how he's so effective when he is uses his legs as well as his throwing ability, that combination of being a dual threat. He leads the SEC in completion percentage. He leads in yards per attempt, which is an interesting stat. You don't see many people that do that. But he said that, what makes him special is his ability to throw accurately and to run extremely well, and that that's why he's one of the elite quarterbacks in the country. He also said that Hooker is really good, is as good on the road as he is at home. Why? Because he is so level-headed. He said he's calm. He gets on the road. It doesn't, even in, when there's a crazy atmosphere, it doesn't impact him. And he said he's the same dude at home as he is on the road. And that dude's pretty good. He also talked about trying to avoid taking big hits. Had a couple against Florida. He said you need to be smart about when to go down. But he also said that he's one of the fiercest competitors I have ever been around. And if he tries to protect himself, he is not as effective as a quarterback, but he still has to learn when to go down. I asked Halsey if Hooker's a lot more accurate and has a greater understanding of the system now as compared to August of 2021. He said absolutely. There's no comparison. And his understanding of what to do, he's a great decision maker. He's got a great IQ, and he's accurate with every pass that he throws. That helps make you pretty good. Brian Jean-Marie, linebacker's coach, was there, and I asked him about when you face a mobile quarterback, because I've seen some of these other defenses do this. If you got a mobile quarterback, if you tell your pass rushers, do not rush past where the quarterback is. So you don't want the quarterback to duck underneath you. You kind of build a fence in front so that he doesn't have any lane to run in. And he said, yeah, that's one of the things that they do. He also felt like going against Anthony Richardson helps preparing for Jaden Daniels, the LSU quarterback, because Daniels also is very mobile. I would have said that Daniels is a little bit better passer than Richardson, except Richardson threw for 453 yards against Tennessee. I'll say this. Daniels is more consistently good passer than Richardson. But Daniels is elusive. Brian Kelly's already said he's going to play. Now, will he be as mobile as he has been in some other games? I don't know that. But I know Brian Jean-Marie really impressed. He said the LSU running backs are super talented. One of the better groups we would have played against. They rotate three guys. He talked about Emery and Williams and Kane as being downhill runners with a lot of power. He also mentioned that he likes where the linebackers are, but he said the way the game is played right now, where you got to defend from sideline to sideline, you got RPOs, you got spreads, you got all kind of stuff. He said it is really hard to play linebacker. He said, I joke with the players the other day that I'm glad I played linebacker when I did and not playing it right now, because it's so much harder to play that position. And then I asked him, I said, well, in that situation, is play recognition as important or more important than speed? He said play recognition's right up there. He said, if you don't recognize the play and you run the wrong way, you're further out of the play than you should be. So he said play recognition is very important, and that's something that they really need to make sure they do a good job of against LSU. That gets back to eye discipline, gets back to scouting too, and having an idea of what LSU is going to do, what they're going to do offensively. But play recognition is very high on his list as far as the ability to be an efficient linebacker. Rick Clawson, quarterback at Tennessee. In fact, he was the last Tennessee quarterback to beat LSU. And that was in an incredible game back in 2005. Rick, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
We're doing fine. Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. By the way, tell folks what you're up to now.
Just running the family business. Me, my brother Casey, and my sister Katie bought the insurance business for my father about 3 years ago. And just running the family business, got two little girls that I'm dealing with, a two-year-old and a four-year-old, so chasing those little girls around a little bit. So life on the West Coast is all good.
All right, great. Rick, we mentioned the last time Tennessee beat LSU was in 2005. It was in Baton Rouge. It was on a Monday night. It went into overtime. What are some of your memories about that contest?
Yeah, it was a crazy week. I mean, obviously, I think it was Hurricane Katrina at the time. I know the Gulf Coast had been hammered pretty good due to Hurricane Katrina. So we did not know if we were going to play or not. We flew in actually the day of the game. I believe it was Monday morning. We flew in to Baton Rouge. Didn't really have a place to stay. We stayed in, I think, a conference room of a hotel and just kind of set up shop in the conference room of a hotel. So it was a pretty awkward pregame ritual compared to what we're normally used to. But the atmosphere was crazy that night, and they jumped out on us pretty good that game.
So did you feel like with all that was going on, you fly in that morning, you don't have a place to room to stay, you're in a conference room, did you feel like the team was ready to play or maybe not, and that's why LSU jumped out to a lead?
I think we were ready to play. I think they were just so energized. I mean, obviously, it was probably the first real relief that not only the fans but the football players at LSU had in quite a while since the hurricane. We were ready to play. We were actually really excited to play just because it was Monday night. It was a little bit unique and a little bit different. And obviously, when you go on the road in the SEC, the environments are always spectacular. So we were pretty excited to play. It's just they had so much energy, and they got off to a really good start.
Rick, how weird was it, too, just kind of not even check into a hotel, but kind of hang out, because that's such a big part of a road trip where you get in, you settle in, got your meeting rooms, and then, of course, the team room. But this was just kind of you guys were put almost – like in a corner because so much of the hotel rooms then were needed for hurricane relief, right?
Yeah, yeah. We were lucky to even get a place to stay and to even kind of set up shop just because everything was for FEMA and hurricane relief. So it was good. I mean, I do remember that night or that day. I mean, it was so hot and humid. Yeah. I don't even know what the heat index was that game at kickoff time and stuff like that, but it was a very hot, muggy, bayou night, just to say the least.
Yeah, and it was the first time that LSU had ever played a Monday night game at home, as it was pushed back because of the hurricane. But and you mentioned they got off to a great start. What was the mood of the team for Tennessee like at half?
Just trying to weather the storm. I mean, literally, they just came out guns blazing, and we knew that they were going to come out pretty excited because I think one of their previous game got canceled, so they hadn't played in a little bit of time, and their fans have obviously been displaced due to the hurricane. So we knew that they were going to come out firing on all cylinders, and for us, it was just a matter of just kind of weathering the storm, just offensively putting a couple drives together and just letting the defense settle in because we were so good defensively that year. Once we got moving on the offensive side of the ball and could settle in a little bit, I think everybody just kind of took a deep breath and relaxed a little bit more and just played the game.
I guess Rick Clawson, he was Tennessee's quarterback the last time they beat LSU. That was in 2005. So LSU led 21-0 at halftime. What was halftime like, Rick?
Not much. There wasn't a whole lot of yelling going on. I know the defensive and offensive staffs were just trying to calm us down and just saying, hey, just execute the game plan, do what we need to do, do what we've been doing all week in practice. Don't need to be a superhero. There is no 21-point touchdowns, so we just need to take it kind of one step at a time, one drive at a time, and just kind of chip away at the lead if we possibly could and just sustain some drives and get some positive momentum because – LSU had all the momentum in that first half for sure.
So was there a play or a drive in which you felt like, okay, Tennessee's right back in this game?
I think it was our first scoring drive. Up to that point, I don't know if we had – I don't recall too much, but I don't even know if we crossed the 50-yard line in the first half. I think we struggled offensively. The crowd noise was electric, so I know we had quite a few penalties in the first half. There were a couple costly turnovers on special teams that kind of put us in a hole. So I think that first scoring drive when we drove the ball down, I think in the second half, it was either the first or second drive of the second half, just to kind of take a little bit of pressure off, to realize that we can move the ball against these guys, because they were, I think at the time, ranked number 5 in the country. I think we were in the top 10 at that time as well. So, you know, it was just putting together some positive momentum for the offensive side, and defensively, those guys had been lights out, you know, all season long. So it was just about the offense, you know, putting together a couple drives that would make make everything settle down a little bit.
You were 6 for 7 on that possession with Brett Smith catching the touchdown pass. And I'm just wondering, when you are down like you are, what is it like when you just see it start to click a little bit, as you mentioned right then, in terms of just kind of getting a little, just taking care of what Tennessee needed to take care of?
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's like anything else. It's like if you're playing basketball, you need to see the ball go in the basket. You know, if you're a pitcher, you just need to throw a couple strikes before you start to get in the flow. And it's no different with football. You just need to kind of get some momentum, get some confidence, and just get back to the basics and stop thinking and overanalyzing or trying to put too many points on the board or trying to do too much. So for us, that first drive was important to just get some momentum, understand exactly what they were trying to do defensively against us at that time, and try not to do too much, but to do enough to put points on the board.
And what is it like when the offense, because you go out and do something like that that puts Tennessee on the board, just see it give the defense a little spark as well?
Yeah, I think it was the fact that the defense got some time to relax a little bit too. I think they were on the field a lot in that first half. Offensively, I don't think we sustained many good drives that first half, so the defense was out there a lot. And on a hot, muggy night in Louisiana, you want to take care of your defense and you want to make sure that they're fresh. So I think it was a good time-consuming drive, I believe, that first scoring drive was. So it gave the defense some time to settle in, to catch their breath, as well as make any adjustments that they needed to make on their side of the ball. And then after that, I think it just kind of snowballed in our favor from there.
Rick, it gets into overtime. So what's the mindset of the Tennessee team at that point?
If I recall, they got the ball first. Mm-hmm. I think we won the toss. We deferred. I think they got the ball first. I don't know if they kicked. They might have kicked a field goal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You guys kind of correct me on that front. Yeah, they kicked a field goal. So we knew we had to get 3, but with the way that the momentum had shifted to the second half, we did not want to go in multiple overtimes in somebody else's backyard. So we needed to take care of the football, make sure that we didn't turn the ball over. I didn't take any sacks to take us out of field goal range, but we just needed to continue the momentum that we had, move the ball down the field, put us in a position to where we could score a touchdown, but at worst, kick a field goal. That was pretty much the mindset, was to be aggressive, but don't be reckless with the football in that situation.
Joe Riggs ended up scoring the winning touchdown. And I wonder, after that game, what was that locker room like?
Oh, it was pandemonium. I mean, it was crazy. just the fight, you know, the camaraderie in that locker room. That was a pretty senior-laden group, if I recall, with those guys. So, you know, we've been pretty battle-tested, been through the ringer. And that win, I think we came off a loss from Florida, which was disappointing, I think, for everybody, just because we didn't play our best football down in the swamp. So to kind of have the bad football roll into the LSU game and then kind of halfway through the game turn it around a little bit and get some positive momentum and then ultimately come out on top in a crazy, crazy game, crazy atmosphere, crazy circumstances. I mean, regardless of the outcome of the game, I think everybody was going to remember playing on a Monday night in Louisiana after Hurricane Katrina. So just with everything that transpired, the resiliency of flying down that morning, not having a place to stay, how hot it was, and just overcoming everything that we overcame pretty much that whole day. It was a pretty great, unique feeling for everybody.
Did you guys have to wade through some LSU fans after you got on the team bus to leave the stadium? And what was that like?
Yeah. I think going into the stadium was a little crazier than leaving, or going into it before the game was crazier than leaving the stadium. I think somebody threw a frozen beer can or a beer can through, I think, bus three's windshield.
Wow.
On the way into the stadium that night. So, you know, they were fired up. It was a phenomenal college atmosphere. I mean, that's what you get when you go on the road in the SEC. So, it was just one of those memorable games and memorable experiences that I'm sure everybody remembers.
And the fact that you were at LSU before you were at Tennessee, what was it like to celebrate that win with your Volunteer teammates?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I got to see a lot of my former roommates and former friends pregame. A couple of them came up to me after the game. It was just, you know, it was the ultimate team win, I think, because I think the defense did a really good job keeping us in the game, even though it was 21-0, but keeping us in the game in the first half. Obviously, the second half, the offense started to click. The defense came up with a couple huge turnovers in the second half. Special teams was phenomenal. So it was just the ultimate team win, overcoming some adversity, which we saw in the first half, and just kind of chipping away at a lead and ultimately coming out on top.
Was it extra special since it was LSU?
I think it was a little bit for myself. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, when I was there, Coach Saban had just left, and I think he went to the Dolphins, so Les Miles was there. And, I mean, they were recruiting, kind of like Alabama's recruiting right now. I think they were – when I was at LSU, I think we were a top five recruiting class. The year after that was number two, number three. So they were in the top five recruiting class every year. And, you know, the quarterback room got full. And Jamarcus Russell, Matt Mock, Marcus Randall, there were a bunch of guys that played in the NFL that were in that quarterback room and were a heck of a lot better than I was. So I kind of saw the writing on the wall and left. But I got great friends from that place. Great relationships with people, and it was, if I had to do it all over again, I'd do it the exact same way. The people in Louisiana, the football, the pride, the passion that they have down there, it's an unbelievable place too.
Do you think that you proved a lot of people wrong? Because there were some folks that doubted you, Ray.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think wherever you go or whatever you do, people are always going to doubt everybody's ability from time to time. As good as I played in the second half that game, yeah, there's, you know, I didn't play very good the week before at Florida, you know, so it's just certain nights, you know, the stars aligned, and that kind of was the situation down in Baton Rouge with myself and the rest of the team. And, you know, sometimes you play well and you win, sometimes you don't play well and you lose, and that's just kind of the way the ball rolls from time to time.
Was LSU the most hostile road environment in which you played?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, especially that night, because it wasn't just LSU. I mean, it was Monday night. It was Hurricane Katrina. I know a lot of their football players and a lot of the LSU community was displaced, taking in families from New Orleans due to the hurricane. So that environment, I don't know if you can replicate that just because of every aspect outside of just the football itself. That played a part into that Monday night game. But that was by far the loudest stadium I've ever played in, was definitely Death Valley on that Monday night for sure.
Rick, the Vols are headed there this weekend, and it'll be an 11 a.m. local time kick when they go up against the Tigers, Vols number 8 in the country. What's it been like to watch this program start to climb the ladder and get into the top 10 as they have under Josh Heupel?
I think he's doing a heck of a job. He's been a winner everywhere he's ever been, you know, and the way in which he's putting together his roster has been really unique and really cool to watch. Offensively, they're dynamic. They make the defense very uncomfortable, which from an offensive standpoint is pretty unique to see and pretty cool to see. They're going to take their shots, you know, which – is really fun as a former quarterback to watch. I mean, they're going to throw the deep ball. They're going to run it. They're going to run a lot of different formations and spread out the defense and find ways to find mismatches. And then they're going to exploit them when they can. So he's done a heck of a job. I know they're recruiting really, really well out here in California, as well as across the country. So the future is definitely looking very, very bright for the Vols.
It's been 17 years since Tennessee beat LSU. The last guy to do it was Rick Clawson in 2005. Rick, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Great to catch up with you. Best of luck to you, and keep up with those two girls.
I definitely will. Tell everybody I said hi.
Sure will. Thank you. Rick. Appreciate it. Rick Clawson, Tennessee quarterback, and he led Tennessee to that win. I will say that, and I hesitated in saying this, but I ran into Nick Saban in 2005 at the SEC spring meetings, and he said, "Where's Rick Clawson going?" I said, "He's going to go to Tennessee." He said, "I don't think he can play in the SEC." And then Tennessee goes down there with Rick Clawson and beats LSU.
Yep.
I thought that was pretty interesting that that transpired, but good for Rick Clawson.
Sure enough, and it really was such a unique time. As just for one minor correction, Hurricane Katrina pushed back LSU's opener that year. It was Hurricane Rita that had come through with a second hit in that area, and that's what forced Tennessee to play on that Monday.
Yes.
So it was Katrina, and then it was the combo. It was Rita that actually pushed everything back. But just to know that you fly down same day, play a game, fly back, and you don't really get the chance to unpack, unwind, or anything like that. Just it was such a unique and strange situation, but it only adds to the accomplishment of what the Vols did, especially after they fell down 21-0.
Absolutely. And I didn't see that comeback coming. I don't think many people did, but good for Tennessee and good for Clawson.
When we return, it's hour number two of Sports Talk, and Vince Ferrara joins us here at Pratt Pavilion for Vince's Views. Stay with us on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.